You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
We love the herb.
It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, September 20th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us again, and welcome to the middle of the week. We've got an amazing show for you today. We've been following that story here in the Pacific Northwest up in Cheney, Washington, the kidnapping and murder of Cameron Smith, the dispensary employee. We have got a new development in that case, and it is just mind-blowing. We'll bring that to you in the end of the show today in the Radical Rant. We've got some audio from KHQ up there in the Palouse, I believe, is where they're located. And you just have to hear it to believe it. And if you visit our blog later on in the day, the MJAgenda.com website, I'll post a link to the video so that you can actually see what you'll hear. And it's just it'll just shake you to your core. Also coming up on the show today, we're going to take a look at medical cannabis here in the state of Oregon. We've got an edition of our Activist Agenda to bring to you, and I'm bringing back a clip from the summertime from Anthony Taylor, the head of Compassionate Oregon. He spoke at the Portland Hemp Fest, and he had a lot to say about the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program and the use of cannabis for medical purposes. Anthony Taylor and the folks at Compassionate Oregon have been working hard to keep patients in mind as we transition through this legalization. And I got to say, it's not going smoothly in any of the states that have medical marijuana. Washington, of course, their program really got slammed. Oregon's is starting to get to be unrecognizable. Colorado didn't change much, but they didn't have much to change. Their limits weren't that different from what they have for recreational, so not much has changed there. And we'll keep our eyes on what's going on with the patients in Alaska. And then, of course, four other legal states are all medical states as well. California, Nevada, Massachusetts, and Maine. They'll all have to go through this growing pains of how do we reconcile medical marijuana and the extreme need and the extreme diversity needed in that market versus recreational marijuana. How's that going to work? It's the big story coming up for the rest of this year. Let's get to the news.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Wednesday, September 20th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. A pending Supreme Court case, District of Columbia versus Wespe, may have implications when it comes to police searches within the states that have legalized marijuana. Writing in CrimProf blog, Kevin Cole describes the case involving the arrest of partygoers at a Washington, D.C. home where there were, quote, several scantily clad women with money tucked into garter belts in addition to spectators drinking alcoholic beverages and holding U.S. currency in their hands, end quote. The people arrested believed they had permission to be there. The homeowner had not given permission, so they were arrested for unlawful entry. The Supreme Court will have to determine whether the belief by the partygoers that they were acting lawfully should render the arrests invalid. The decision could impact marijuana states, for instance, where adults may believe they're lawfully growing a legal amount of cannabis, but police disagree and decide to make an arrest. The bipartisan authors of the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act are preparing to reintroduce their comprehensive legislation to review prison sentences for certain nonviolent drug offenders, reduce recidivism, and save taxpayer dollars. The legislation, led by Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley and Senate Democratic Whip Dick Durbin, improves judicial discretion at sentencing for low-level offenders and helps inmates successfully reenter society while tightening penalties for violent criminals and preserving key prosecutorial tools for law enforcement. The senators plan to reintroduce the bill as they continue to work with stakeholders to make additional updates. Quote, while the political landscape in Washington has changed, the same problems presented by the current sentencing regime remain, end quote, explained Senator Grassley. Senator Durbin pointed out that, quote, mandatory minimum sentences were once seen as a strong deterrent. In reality, they have too often been unfair, fiscally irresponsible, and a threat to public safety, end quote. Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner signed a bill yesterday that bolsters transparency for civil forfeiture and strengthens due process protections for innocent property owners. Under civil forfeiture, law enforcement agencies can seize and then take title to cash, cars, and other valuables without charging anyone with, let alone convicting them of, a crime. The bill, HB 303, received broad bipartisan support, passing the Senate unanimously and with only one vote against it in the House. HB 303 will oblige agencies to report their forfeiture expenditures, including spendings on salaries, overtime, compensation for crime victims, drug abuse programs, travel, meals, and operating expenses. Require that all forfeiture reporting be posted to a public searchable database on the Department of State Police's website. Allow the department to adopt rules that require withholding forfeiture funds from non-compliant agencies. Mandate regular independent audits for the State Asset Forfeiture Fund. Institute new notice requirements. And shift the burden of proof from property owner to the state where it belongs. With the addition of Illinois, there are now 25 states, half the country, where legislators have reined in abusive civil asset forfeiture. Earlier this month, citing racism, bigotry, and mass incarceration, the Pennsylvania Democratic Party adopted a resolution to, quote, support Democratic candidates and policies which promote the full repeal of cannabis prohibition by its removal from the Controlled Substances Act and to support the creation of new laws which regulate it in a manner similar to other culturally accepted commodities, end quote. The resolution was drafted by Derek Rosenzweig, longtime cannabis activist from Pennsylvania and former board member of Philly Normal. This change in party policy comes as Pennsylvania Auditor General Eugene DePasquale continues to be a loud and active voice for state and held a seminar on legalization or active voice for state legalization, excuse me, and held a seminar on legalization the day before the vote. Metro News Canada reports that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said he won't ask the American government to change its border rules around marijuana use when Canada legalizes pot next year. Currently, U.S. border guards can question travelers about marijuana use and can refuse entry over the issue. Travelers can get waivers in the future, but it can be a costly and time-consuming process. Trudeau, who has previously admitted to using marijuana and was traveling to New York to visit the United Nations on Tuesday, said the U.S. sets its own rules. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Wednesday, September 20th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. If you appreciate my full-time dedication to reporting and analyzing the news about cannabis, consider becoming a patron of the show. For just $4.20 per month, you'll help keep my live stream and podcast free while earning yourself your own private ad-free podcast link for the show, as well as links to the supporting articles and data. For a $9.99 VIP subscription, you'll get all that plus my exclusive research, data tables, and graphics. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button today.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm astonished to hear people suggest we can solve our heroin crisis. Have you heard this? By having more marijuana.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Activism begins with ACT. The Marijuana Agenda features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's Activist Agenda.
Good day and welcome to Activist Agenda. I'm Russ Belville. Saturday, June 10th, in Portland, Oregon, the first annual Portland Hemp Fest Expo was held at the Portland Exposition Center on Marine Drive. This all-day event featured vendors and speakers from all across the Pacific Northwest, including Anthony Taylor, the head of Compassionate Oregon, the leading organization fighting for the rights of medical marijuana patients in the Beaver State. Anthony spoke to open the event on the use of cannabis as a medicine for all sorts of health conditions and the fight to protect medical marijuana from the advent of adult use legalization, regulations for which are threatening many medical marijuana patients' rights. This is Anthony Taylor.
What about cannabis for health conditions for the everyman, and what about cannabis for patients here in Oregon? I advocate for cannabis as medicine, and I use it myself daily. I use topicals for minor aches and pains. I use edibles for titration, meaning I ingest 15 milligrams of cannabis 3 times a day, and again at bedtime, and I use flower for breakthrough conditions. I believe cannabis should be available for anybody that needs it, and in today's market, it just about is. This is part of the dynamic that happened when marijuana was legalized, dispensaries were legalized. Marijuana, even though it's a scheduled controlled substance, has become an over-the-counter product. And anybody can walk into the store and buy what they need. And it makes it tricky to keep this dialogue going that, you know, marijuana is medicine and we need to make sure that this dialogue keeps going. So, you know, a medical patient can, in fact, walk into these stores. They can buy products that are of a higher potency and in greater quantities. But while this is convenient, it does pose many problems for patients, not the least of which is cost. Today's prices are out of reach for most patients. Many of them have also lost their growers and are no longer getting the medicine from a grower at free or greatly reduced prices. A quick look at Leafly, and one can see while most stores do offer $6 and $8 grams, most range in the price from $12 to $18. For flower and $60 to $75 for a gram of concentrate. Patients that need these products every day cannot afford these prices. And although OLCC stores are allowed to give marijuana away for free, I have yet to go into a store that has that program set up. They might be a little hesitant to do it because when they give marijuana to patients for free, it means they're not buying it from them in their stores. This is unfortunate, it's uncompassionate. And I think the owners of these OLCC licensed stores need to take it upon themselves to figure out a way to make sure this is happening. So for instance, they could shoulder the cost of testing if the grower throws a pound or two into this low income system. But we've been talking for 2 years in the legislature about creating such a program, and to date, no legislation has been introduced to create a low-income patient program. We, as Compassionate Oregon, will be working on that hard next session along with some other issues that are facing cannabis. So $14 a gram equals $6,300 a pound, and $18 a gram equals $8,100 a pound. Most of the stores mark up products 100%. I don't know any growers that are getting $3,200 or $4,000 for a pound, and I don't know any of the stores that are offering to pick up any of the testing costs or the packaging and labeling costs. So we've got to make some changes in this direction with the OLCC licensed retailers. What these stores do provide, however, is anonymity. It provides a safe refuge for, you know, the college president or the doctor or the veterinarian or the lawyer or the school teacher that was hesitant to become part of a state-sponsored program and put their name on a list. So this allows them to go in and buy the product they need. Now, the difference here is that a lot of the patients that are part of the program have needs that need to be met daily. Some of the other folks are using the cannabis occasionally or when the conditions surpass their ability to cope with them, and they'll take a little bit of their product like we do with Tylenol or Aleve or NyQuil. So these are their needs, and we have to make it cheaper for them to purchase their products. So these, again, are people that can walk into these stores and afford to purchase these products. But they're just buying a little tin of cannabis healing balm, and it's going to last them for a couple of months, so they can afford, you know, $45 for that small tin of salve. But somebody that's using that, goes through a tin like that for neuropathy pain or carpal tunnel issues or arthritis, they're going to go through something like that in a week. And for people that have to use a gram of oil every day to buy it in the stores, it's gonna, at $60 a pop, what's that, $420 a week, $1,600 and some dollars per month? People can't afford that, and that's part of Compassionate Oregon's goal also, is to make sure that they can be subsidized. So, for instance, going back to the low-income patient program, if a patient has stamped on his card that that card was received at a reduced application fee, like $20 for the veterans or $50 for SSI people, then they get a greatly discounted or free product. These are the kinds of things that the industry needs to do to help patients, because the legislature certainly has not helped patients. And the OLCC growers as well can now take advantage of the opportunity to grow a bump-up canopy, of which 75% of the yield has to go to patients. And the other 25% can go into their inventory and go out into the retail market. But these sorts of things, the OLCC licensees need to start taking advantage of. And if they're having troubles getting rid of 75% of their extra canopy to patients, then they should be able to go to this low-income program and give it away there and satisfy the 75-25 split. I know this is a little complicated and a little boring, but these are the things that OLCC and the legislature and OHA have put in place to help take up some of the slack, because from January of 2015 to October of 2016, the number of patients that did not designate a grower doubled. It went from about 8,000 to over 16,000, and now we're closing in on 18,000. And the recent legislation that was just passed and signed into law restricts people's ability to grow their medicine by cutting it in half. Now, the law right now says you can have no more than 6 medical plants at your home. You can have your 4 recreational plants, but if there's a married couple, and why we call this particular issue the marriage penalty, if there's a married couple, they can't grow 12 plants. They can't grow 6 plants each. They can grow 6 medical and 4 recreational, and that's all they're allowed to have. So some of the damage that was created by this bill we're trying to fix with House Bill 2198. And another thing that has happened recently is the OHA has said to the medical marijuana growers, you can no longer use GPS coordinates or tax lot ID numbers as an address for your medical marijuana grow site. This will have a devastating effect on patients. There's about 4,000 patients that this would affect immediately, and they would be unable to renew their grower. And the grower, unless this changes, will in the end be unable to register his own grow site at his own property. So that's another thing that House Bill 2198 fixes. It also creates the Oregon Cannabis Commission, which will be the new administrative body for the medical marijuana program. They are required to report back to the legislature, something that's never been required for the medical marijuana program before. We've had 18 years with nobody coming to the legislature except patient advocates and people that are our patients themselves and saying, we need help here. Nobody has come as an agency, come to the legislature and say, we need help here. Nobody from OHA has come before the legislature and said, if you reduce the number of patients number of plants that a grower can grow for their patients, you're going to hurt this program. OHA has been MIA for so many years that the time has come to change management. So House Bill 2198 will put OMMP under new management. The people, OHA, over the last couple of years, under the direction of Andre Uso, have made inroads for patients. The turnaround time for cards is down to 10 days or less. There's an online application system where you can just go online and enter all your information, pay your money, you get a receipt, and a few days later, you get your card in the mail. On top of it, they put together and maintain a reporting system for the OMMP growers and the dispensaries and processors. They've done a lot of stuff over there, so we want to keep them working over there, but we want to give them some new bosses. And I don't think anybody will appreciate it more than the staff at OMMP. So for patients, legalization has actually been a double-edged sword. Sure, they can walk into a store now and buy product, but most can't afford it. Since legalization, most people have asked, now that it's legal, what do we need a medical marijuana program for? And I will assure you, from my experience anyway, that any state that has a medical marijuana program and legalizes marijuana for everyday consumption by everyday citizens, they will lose their medical marijuana program if the advocates for this program, the patients and their growers and their dispensaries, don't stand up and answer the question honestly and completely, yes, we need a medical marijuana program, and here is why. It doesn't matter that marijuana is legal. These people need medicine. This is a medicine that they have found that has been a medicine of last resort for many of them and many of their children and many of their aging parents. So it's important to make sure that cannabis is not regulated like alcohol, because when you put the alcohol regulators in place, it's not good for patients. And everything that industry does affects patients. Everything. Because the problem is that the patients and the growers that provide for these patients pose a threat in the competition. And rather than everybody embracing all these different growers and all these different ways of bringing product to patients and to the market, they want to be protectionists and isolationists and say, no, 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 you can't come into our market. That puts the state of Oregon and therefore the patients in a very bad position, because the regulatory structure for the adult use people excludes the medical marijuana producers from any market. And so please, if you're in a state that's about to or wants to legalize marijuana and you have a medical program, please make sure that you stand up and fight hard for the medical marijuana program.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
We've turned the corner on drug addiction in the United States. Drug addiction in the United States is under control.
Okay,
maybe you're a little high.
Hey, everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill. That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave a state.
Negative reports coming out of.
Don't smoke marijuana.
For the past week or so, we have been covering the case of Cameron Smith, who was a dispensary employee at a place called Lucid, a dispensary in Cheney, Washington. And he was on his lunch break. This was on September 10th, when a man named Donovan Culps and his 18-year-old niece, Violetta Culps, went to the Lucid pot shop in Cheney, Washington, and they were denied entry into the shop because they did not have identification. And first of all, Violetta wouldn't be able to get in even with ID because she's only 18. So they didn't have any identification. The next thing you know, Donovan Culps goes over to the parking lot and then shoots at and kidnaps Cameron Smith, the 40-something pot shop employee who'd just been sitting in his SUV eating lunch. And Donovan steals the SUV, drives off with Cameron and the SUV. The niece drives off in the car they had brought with them. Cameron was listed as missing for days. We covered that story on the news. We talked about how Cameron was missing. Everyone was looking for him. Then, of course, they found the suspect, Donovan Culps, led police on a high-speed chase, wrecked his car into a tree, and they brought him in. They're still looking for Violetta and another woman who may have been involved in the kidnapping. And Donovan Culps then led the police to the body of Cameron Smith, who had been shot and killed. So that's where the story was as of the last time I brought you any news on it. And today we get a new piece of news from KHQ, news station up there in the Spokane area, where one of their reporters went in to interview Donovan Culps as he sits in jail, arraigned on the charges of kidnapping and I forget what the other charges were. And I'll just play for you the interview and we'll talk about that.
Thank you for being with us on this Monday. I'm Stephanie Vigil. We spoke with Donovan Culps from behind bars. We didn't know what would happen, but what did happen was a full confession, a confession that was unscripted, unprompted, and unbelievable. KHQ's Haley Gunther has this story.
I was having a bad day, very bad day, and he got the ugly side of it.
Self-confessed killer Donovan Culps says he was just trying to blow off some steam last Sunday.
I mean, I wanted to die that day.
You wanted to die that day?
Yeah.
So instead you killed somebody else?
He headed from the Yakima area to this pot shop in Cheney, but was turned away because he didn't have ID. He says when he hit the parking lot, he saw this man, pot shop employee Cameron Smith, sitting in his car having lunch.
I didn't walk over there to kill him. I didn't walk over there to shoot him. I didn't. I walked over there to fight him.
But, why?
Because he was disrespecting me.
Culps says he and Smith exchanged some words, and in an instant, he snapped, pulling the trigger at least 3 times.
I did not think about it. I just pulled a gun and shot him.
What did you do?
It happens.
Why would you do this? Do you know he had kids?
No.
Culp says he then stole Smith's car with his lifeless body inside.
Dumped the body, I dumped the car, then I went home.
Just like it was nothing?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just like it was nothing.
And this may not be Culp's first time committing murder. When I asked him to tell me more about that, his demeanor immediately changed.
Have you ever killed someone before? Have you?
Now, Steph, I have spoken with both local police and the FBI about my interview with Mr. Culp. They say their investigation into him and into his past is very active and ongoing. We'll make sure to stay on top of that and bring you the very latest as new details trickle in. Steph?
So chilling. All right. Thank you, Haley. Culp's 18-year-old niece, Violetta, is still wanted by police for not reporting the crime. And as of today, police say she remains on the run.
It's Toyota's end-of-season savings event. Get a 2017 Toyota with...
Sorry about the ad on the end there, but that's the audio from KHQ, the interview with Donovan Culp, who said he had a very bad day. Cameron Smith just got the ugly side of it, that he didn't intend to kill him. He just wanted to go over and fight him because he's disrespecting. I'm sure the pot shop employee who was minding his own business, eating a sandwich in his car, must have done something terribly disrespectful. So this cold-blooded murderer tosses the body and goes home like it was nothing. His words. And you hear cases like this, and I know a lot of people out there, I read the Facebook posts, I've read the comment sections that say, this is the worst kind of human scum. He needs to be put to death. You know, firing squad. Let's not even waste time on it. And that is my visceral reaction. That's my first initial reaction is someone like this just needs to be put down. He's just a broken human being. But I still have to stand by my principle that I can't support the death penalty. Even in a case like this where the guy is confessing when it's obvious that this guy's a loser scumbag that needs to die, I can't endorse the state doing that. I can't endorse the death penalty. I just can't do it. And in fact, that guy, if you heard him talking, he said on that day he wanted to die. Why would we give this guy what he wants? This guy obviously is, leading any sort of spectacular life. He's probably got all sorts of self-hatred. Let's make him live with that. Let's put him in a cage for the rest of his life. Let's just keep him caged up. Let him sit the next 40, 50 years being nothing, being less than nothing, having to live with what he's done, knowing that he won't see his niece again, he won't see anybody again. I feel like executing someone like this, executing anyone, is letting them get off easy. They're getting off easy. Death is painless. After you're dead, there's no more pain. No, let's let these guys live a few more decades and experience as much pain as they possibly can. And I know the counter-argument often becomes, well, it costs so much money. Why should the taxpayers have to house this person for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years and pay for their medical expenses, etc.? I understand that argument. But the way our system is set up, trying to execute someone can be just about as expensive or sometimes more expensive. When you deal with all the appeals and these criminals, they don't have lawyers. So you got to get court-appointed lawyers. You got to pay for that. And you're still paying to incarcerate them, right? So you already got the cost of incarcerating them while they're going through the appeals process. Now, to bring this back around to marijuana, obviously this isn't a crime that is marijuana-centric. This could have been an AM/PM. This could have been a 7-Eleven. This could have been a Subway sandwich shop. The fact that this broken human being lashed out at an employee who was on a lunch break is the only relevant part of this story. The marijuana is not even relevant. Just happened to be a marijuana shop. Now, you know, our opponents, though, are going to seize on this and say, ah, see, marijuana brings the wrong crowd. It's a... this crime should make us all take pause and understand what we need to do as an industry, what we need to do as consumers to remain safe. And so I'm going to help out with this. On tomorrow's program, we have our regularly scheduled Police for Reform segment, where we visit with former police officers and attorneys and prosecutors and prison guards and such, people that have seen it face to face. They've seen it. They've been on the front lines. They recognize the war on drugs does not work. And we're going to get an expert on tomorrow, a security expert, someone with some expertise in these very sorts of situations, retail security, dispensary security. Talk about this. What do the dispensaries need to do? What do we need? Do we need to have armed guards at every pot shop? I don't think so, but I'm not the expert. We'll talk to the expert tomorrow on our Police for Reform package. And for that video, if you want to see, you really, if hearing that man didn't put a chill in your spine, at the end of that interview, when she asks if he'd ever killed anyone else, that's when he turned into stone cold killer. That's when he had that 1,000-yard stare. He was just, and she freaked out. He just sat there and stared at her for like, you know, 9-10 seconds, and she had to get up and move. And she's behind the bulletproof glass, right? I mean, there's no way he could get her. That stare alone sent a chill through her. You got to see it. I'll have that posted along with the Radical Rant post on the MJAgenda.com website. And it's available. This one will be a free posting. So we'll tell everyone and link it and share it for other folks. This rant we're going to put out for free because we're using that audio from KHQ, so I can't charge for it. But please check that out. Judge for yourself. That's all the time we got for today. Thanks for joining us here. For everyone here at Delta 9 Houses Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You think you're free, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it.